This is Leo Costa Jr. coming to you from BigBeyondBelief.com. We have a really good show today. We'll be talking with Sandy. Sandy, how do you say your last name? Du Bois?
Dubois.
A nice little French
Dubois.
Name. Nice little French
yes.
name? Yeah. Okay, sounds good. Sandy, before we get started, why don't you give us a little bio, if you will, about yourself?
Okay, well, I am originally from New York. I've been out in California for the last 42 years. I am 62 years old. I've been married for 38 years, and I have two adult kids, a 37-year-old daughter and a 35-year-old son, and seven grandchildren from age 19 all the way to 9. Six girls and one boy. And I live in Rancho Cucamonga, California. I am a natural competitor in women's bodybuilding. And I also do hair. I have my own studio.
Okay.
So
with that being, bodybuilding. Okay. So let me ask you now, what age did you get into the sport of bodybuilding? And before that, were you an athlete?
I wasn't an athlete growing up, but when I was in high school, I started working out at a gym. They had opened at Jack LaLanne's, and I went and I was started working out there. And then I worked there for just a little season. And then when I moved out here, I joined gyms and I would work out, but nothing real, you know, intense. And then in the 80s, when Rachel McLish had come out, I had saw a magazine of her and I thought, oh, I love that body. So I brought the magazine home and I told my husband, I want to look like that. Yeah. So I joined a gym and took my kids there. Those days they didn't even have childcare. So I talked the owner of the gym of, look, let me bring my kids. They'll sit right in front of the mirror. They won't do anything. And let me train. And he let me. And I wanted to compete, but in those days, nobody taught you how to meal prep or, you know, how to really be prepared. So I just kind of let it go. I laid it down for a while. And then 9 years ago, I would go to the gym off and on through the years. And then 9 years ago, I went back to the gym and just started working out and doing cardio, and the weight started coming off. I had put on a little bit of weight, but nothing where you'd look at me and say, she's overweight. I just look normal and thicker.
Yeah.
And then one of my best friends said, you need to do cardio. So I was like, okay. So that got me hooked. And then as soon as I went over to the weights, the muscle memory came back and I was hooked.
Yeah.
And that was it from there.
Yeah, in the 80s, Rachel McLish was quite something back then. I remember that, you know. I wonder if she's still around. Do you know if she's still around?
She's still around.
Is that right?
Yes, she's on social media. I follow her.
Does she live in California or where does she live now?
I don't know where she lives, but she still looks good.
Yeah, she was like the, you know, a lot of people felt like you did, you know. And I remember in the 80s like that, the sport, you know, listen, the sports change and it's always going to change. But especially, I think, for the women, you know, back then when I was competing, I remember in the shows, it was like a mixed posing or mixed couples would compete. But they never really at that time, as I remember, they never really had just a, you know, a spot for the women. I don't think they were really sure which direction that they wanted to go. But Rachel at that time she seemed to be the gold standard. And a lot of people wanted to, as you mentioned, wanted to be like her. You said that the bug bit you. It's interesting because you said the bug bit you after doing cardio for a while. It wasn't that it necessarily bit you because of the weight training? Is that what you mean?
No. What happened is I started losing weight so quickly with the cardio, and then I went right over to the weights, and my muscle memory came back.
Okay.
Because I was losing, you know, the thickness that I had
Yeah.
And I was hooked because I saw how quick my muscle came back.
Yeah.
I had the time now and the energy. My kids were grown and gone. And
yeah.
So I was like, and I started building muscle so fast that I was like, I definitely want to do this.
When you started, when you started training though, were you getting any guidance from anybody, or did you just walk into the gym and kind of figure this thing out on your own? How did that work out for you?
Well, I had remembered what I was doing from years ago, but so I just stuck with that. And then at probably about 6 months later, this man walked over to me, and he was a trainer, and he had said, "Hey, are you a pro?" And I'm like, "Pro what?" And he said, "Competitor." And I go, "Oh no, I'm too old for that." And he says, "Well, I can get you ready if you want to compete." And I was like, I'm in my 50s, man. So I set up a meeting with him, and he wanted me to come and train with him at like 5 a.m. And I don't see 5 a.m. ever.
Yeah.
So that wasn't going to work for me. So I had decided, all right, this is something I could do. Let me find a trainer. So I went to Zero Gravity Fitness, which is now in Claremont. They were in San Dimas at the time. And I spoke to Ryan Benson, and he said, "You have a lot of muscle mass. You look good. Give me 6 months. I'll get you on the stage, and we'll get you in women's physique." And at that point, that was when women's physique was just starting. It was the first show out. So we got ready, and I did my first show, and I took top five, my first show out. So, and then I was hooked. I was like, I did a show every 6 weeks for 3 years.
You got to be kidding me. Every 6 weeks?
Every 6 weeks.
Holy crap. I can tell you that, you know, we were lucky. For me, I was lucky if I did two a year, you know? And to do one every 6 weeks and to be, I mean, you're basically peaked the whole time, you know?
I was peaked the entire time.
And you said you did that for three years?
Yeah, I did 13 shows in 3 years, and my last three shows, I went into women's lightweight bodybuilding.
Uh-huh.
And every show, after the first show, I took second. In every show except one, I took third.
Yeah.
So
when you got into it, you got into it. That's for sure.
That's how I do everything. I get into it. I'm like, oh yeah, let's go.
You know, I was pretty dedicated to the sport. I mean, I hung around for about 15 years and competed, but you know, to be honest with you, for me to think that I wanted to compete every 6 weeks, nah, I wanted the off season. You know, I like the off season and I like to eat, and I was willing to suffer as far as dieting, for maybe 3 or 4 months, you know, but I needed to take a break from that. So that's amazing that you had that much discipline to do that, because I know exactly what it takes to do it just for a couple times a year, let alone, you know, for doing it every 6 weeks for 13 years. Is that what you said?
No.
Oh,
I did 13 shows.
Yeah. Yeah.
In 3 years. And the only reason I stopped was because I had blown out my left hip. You know, after a while, you know yourself that you do heavy weights, and I was doing, 600-pound leg press, you know, once a week, every week, that I blew my hip out. So it started hurting, and I had to stop doing so much heavy weight, and then got to the point where I needed a full hip replacement.
Yeah.
So the show that I was prepping for was 5 years ago. So, and I had hip replacement, I think 3 years ago now. Yeah, so that stopped everything. I still trained every day. I just didn't do my legs for about 8 months.
Yeah.
And then I had the hip replacement and I was back in the gym in a week.
Yeah.
So.
Let me ask you, are you still working with the same trainer? You said you hired a male trainer. And are you still training with him?
Yes.
Okay, so you guys have had quite a long relationship. Did you get or have you gotten much feedback to be in the sport that you're in as a female?
Oh, yeah. I get a lot of feedback. A lot of it is, you know, my age. I don't look my age. I look great. I'm very healthy. I inspire people. I get a lot of positive, and then I get some looks because I don't look like the normal, you know, woman walking around these days, and especially an, you know, mature woman. So, but I get looks. Sometimes I just get like, you know, and then I'm just a smile and try and be approachable.
Yeah.
But for the most part, it's very positive.
Yeah.
So
the, it's really kind of funny because I know when I was doing my thing too, it's like, you're not going to please everybody. And there's so many people that have so many different opinions about what they see, you know, even to the point where right. I was blown away one time when I was like, I was in shape, ready to go on stage. And somebody came up to me and said, man, you look skinny. I'm thinking, oh my God. I mean, at this point I'm weighing 250, I'm 250 pounds, but it's just, that's how they perceive me. You know, it's really, that to me was, okay, this is interesting how people really might look at you. You know what I mean? You just, you don't know. And this, then the response is so vast and interesting. And I don't know about you, but I just learned kind of at that point, it's like, you know, I really have to do this for myself and not be too concerned about what other people mm-hmm. think because of those reasons, you know?
Right.
Now, when you were training in the gym, were you, I'm assuming that you said you were training heavy. Were you pretty intense? Because the reason I'm asking the question is because I have to tell you, no, I'm still a member at Gold's Gym in Venice Beach, and I've been there on and off since the 80s. I trained with Platts. But, you know, Sandy, the atmosphere in the gym today at Gold's Gym is awful in terms of intensity or any kind of seriousness, you know. It just, it's turned into a kind of a, I don't know, man. And so when you train, are you still, do you train intensely, or how's that, you know, what is it for you?
Well, I train 6 days a week and I still train very intense. I have my headset on, and most people in the gym know me, and they know if, you know, don't come up in the middle of a set. If I'm in between a set, I usually pace. I want to catch my breath, you know, and I'll say hi, but I'm not there to socialize. You know, sometimes when I get there, if I have, you know, a few minutes, I'll, you know, say hi to some people and chat for a minute.
But yeah.
I'm very intense.
Yeah.
I used to have a shirt that said, don't talk to me. And I'm serious. This, you know, when I first started and people would come up and go, oh, hey, hey. And I'd look at them like, what are you doing? Like, go away.
Yeah.
So
I know that,
intense.
But it's really weird because, you know, that's kind of what I was used to in back in those days. It was intense, man. You were there to get some work done, but anymore, you know, at least at Gold's, I mean, it floored me that so many people are just taking selfies now. And, you know, it's about, a lot of them are just, they're more concerned about their social media, posting than
right.
they really are, you know, as far as making it kind of a serious deal, which is really interesting for me. 6 days a week. Do you train, your breakdown of how you're training? Is it mainly free weight? Do you have like a certain percentage of machine and cable workout, or do you just do mainly free weight?
I do all of it. I start with free weights, and then usually go to cable, and then I'll go to hammer strength machines, and then sometimes I'll go to the other machines.
So you do it in that order?
I do cardio.
Do you do it in that order?
What's that?
Do you do it in that order?
Yeah.
Okay. Every single time? Is there a
sometimes I switch it up.
Yeah. Is there a particular... go ahead.
Sometimes I'll just say, I'm going to start in the cables. Just depends.
Yeah. But do you have like a routine that's set out for you each time that you go in, or is it instinctive?
Both. I have it written out for each body part. I do one body part a day. And then I do legs twice a week. Sometimes I do back twice a week. And it's some of it's all written out. And then sometimes I'll follow that. And a lot of it, I'll walk in and I'll go, what do I feel like training today? What is my body telling me?
Yeah.
You know, and that's how I've been training lately. I'm like, oh, okay, well, you know, I usually like Mondays would be back, Tuesday would be legs, and then so forth. But then other days I'll go and I'll go, I don't want to do that. I'll do this. or I'll look at my body and go, oh, I want to work on that part.
Yeah. And that's kind of a hard thing to do, because what you're talking about is actually being more instinctive and intuitive, and making that call sometimes when you go in. I know Tom Platz was that way as well. And that for me, that was pretty hard, because I seem to have a tendency of being more regimented. And, you know, I think that being too regimented sometimes gets in the way of what you're talking about, because you go in and you think, no, wait a minute, just because I'm, you know, used to doing this as a routine doesn't necessarily mean that that is what I should do. And that's what kind of what you're doing. That takes a lot of, I think that takes a lot of confidence to do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah. I want to listen to my body, and I want to switch it up, because if you do the same thing and start with the same thing, you know this, every time your body's not going to, you know, react like you want it. You know, if you go in and then I'll start with curls and, you know, and then I'll do, you know, triceps, your body's like, oh yeah, I already know that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, switch it up and even start with something that you, even if you're doing your bicep workout, start with, you know, one of the exercises that you would have done last.
Yeah.
You know, just so your body doesn't go, oh.
Yeah. You know. How many sets per body part do you normally do?
I do 4 to 5 sets instead of 10 to 15.
Mm-hmm.
On legs, it's a lot more. It's usually 4 to 5 sets, 15 to 25 reps.
Okay.
Because I'm trying to build my legs more.
Yeah. So you're saying you're doing 4 to 5 reps for the whole workout, or is it just 4 to 5 reps for...
4 to 5
sets.
Sets.
Okay. For the whole workout. So how long does your workout take to get done?
It takes me about 90 minutes.
Okay, so I'm misunderstanding you. 4 or 5 sets. Okay, so if you're doing curls, for example, do you do 4 or 5 sets of, for example, a barbell curl, and then 4 or 5 sets of a dumbbell curl, 4 or 5 sets of a hammer curl?
Yes.
Okay, because I'm trying to think for what the audience might be thinking. Okay, so you're telling me 4 or five sets for 90 minutes. You're actually talking about you're doing different angles, different, you know, dumbbells versus barbell.
Yes.
Yes. So the total sets
yes.
in the day, like for your arms, how many total sets do you think you would do?
I'll do 5 to 6 different exercises.
There we go.
And 4 sets of 10 to 15 reps per exercise. So I'll do, you know, 4 sets of 10 bicep curls. I might go to the barbell curls, and then I'll go to cable.
Yeah.
And, you know, use the bar with that. I'll go to, you know, hammer strength and do preacher curls.
Yeah.
So forth.
That makes sense. Do you mainly do volume type training, like what you're talking about? 10 to 15 reps is what's considered volume. Do you do primarily just volume? I know you said you had a hip done, so you couldn't lift as heavy, but do you ever switch that part of it up? Do you ever do, you know, maybe you train differently now, but did you do heavy lifting and then some volume training, or has it always been volume?
It's always been volume. And what I do is I graduate the weight. So I'll start, like if I do curls, for example, I always warm up, and then I'll do the first set will be 15 pounds. The second set will be 17 and a half. The third set will be 20. The fourth set will be 25 or 27.
Yeah.
You know, I used to go as high as 35, but I don't need to do that anymore.
Yeah. So you graduate. Interesting. You said that you warm up. You know, one of the things I learned when I went back to years ago, I went back to the East Bloc and trained with a Bulgarian lifting national Olympic team. And I got a lot of my information when I wrote my first book from them. And one of the things they talked about was that warming up was a waste of energy, which blew my mind because, you know, I came from the kind of like what you're talking about. It was I warm up a little bit and then you get into the working set. But one of the things that was really interesting about what I learned from them was how you can teach your body not to have to warm up. It basically, your body's adapting to its environment. So if you teach it that you need to warm up, then that's what it's going to do. And yet I learned over time that I didn't need to warm up anymore. which cut my training sessions down, because one of the things that they talked about, and I'm going to ask about overtraining, because 90 minutes, like you, when you're, are you talking 90 minutes of actual just the weight training? Not that doesn't include cardio, right?
No, I do cardio first thing when I wake up.
Okay.
I have a small spike.
Yeah, okay. So there were the, you know, what I learned was that the way your physiology works is that when you train past 45 minutes, especially an hour, you have the possibility of overtraining the body based on the way your physiology works and responds. So did you ever feel like, when you train like that, do you ever feel like you're overtrained?
I don't feel like I'm overtraining, because what I do is probably different than a lot of people, is I rest longer in between sets. So I'll do a set of curls, and then I'll pace back and forth.
What does that mean?
And then I'll go back.
How many minutes are you resting? How many minutes do you rest?
Probably a minute in between each set.
Okay. And then and then you come back to that set, and so about every minute or so you're doing a set.
Right.
Okay. And you still have there been other than your hip, have you dealt with many injuries?
Nothing from the gym, but I have carpal tunnel. I had surgery last year on my right hand, right here, and that healed instantly. Like, I went back to the gym the next day.
Wow.
Had my little cast on.
Yeah.
And they're getting ready to do my other hand, and that's mainly from work and aging and so forth. But it's never stopped me.
But aside from that, you haven't had,
other than that,
no injuries or anything like that. Even when you were Go ahead.
No, go ahead. Even when what?
Well, even when you were competing in those during that time when you were competing every 6 weeks, you didn't deal with any injuries during that time, because at that point you're, you know, I don't know about you, but you know, you're at a peak condition. You're kind of you know, you're a little bit overtrained just because of you know, what you're doing there, but I, you know, so no injuries then.
I didn't have any injuries when I was competing. I have scoliosis. I've had that all my life, and it's really bad, but I work around it. I don't really have any pain.
Okay.
I went to a chiropractor about 3 months ago because I was having an issue with my shoulder, and he wanted to do x-rays, so he x-rayed my whole back and stuff. And then he takes me into the, you know, show me all the view, and I already know what it looks like. And he says, does your back hurt? And I said, not really. And he says, I don't even want to treat you. He said, because the way your scoliosis is, you really shouldn't even be walking. You should be in a wheelchair. He said, so I'm not going to touch you. He said, so keep doing whatever you're doing. Keep lifting heavy, do whatever you're doing, because you're doing it right. So that's what I do. I have bicep tendonitis in this arm, but I've worked around that as well. And just, I don't let any pain stop me. And I won't let it get me down. Just, I can't.
Yeah. You know, what it sounds like, what you're talking about is that your body has adapted to its environment. I think that's what your chiropractor is saying.
Definitely.
And he doesn't want to mess with that, because, you know, that's almost worse if he does that. And,
right.
And the other thing that you're talking about, and I think sometimes, listen, there's no question in my mind that in order to do this sport, you have to have a mindset that is just equal to none, you know, to get through that. Because
right.
You got to be perfect willingness to walk into the gym and basically put yourself through hell. Yeah, each and every time. And, you know, that certainly develops. That's either going to make or break you, because, you know, who in the hell wants to go into the gym and inflict torture upon your body and, you know, and to keep going back for more? It's really, you know, I sometimes think about that, and it's almost insane. And I think that drives some people in that sport, it drives us crazy a little bit, you know, because you're driven by that. I mean, I remember a time, it was like about 10 days out from a show that I got hurt really bad in a hamstring pull. And there was no way that that was going to keep me out of the show. Even, you know, even if I couldn't walk 100%, it was not going to stop me. It's like you just, nothing's going to stop you. And yet, I can tell you, I had some strokes that stopped me pretty good for a little while. But even then, it was like, oh, I came back, sooner than anybody, normally would. But it does take that.
Well, and that's because we're healthy. That's why.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's why.
And interesting. you said you do cardio in the morning. How much cardio do you actually do? And how many days a week?
Okay. First, let me tell you, I hate cardio. I hate it. Yeah. But I do fasted cardio. So I get up in the morning. I take my minerals, my greens and a shake. And I get my coffee and I go on my, I have a little encumbered bike and I do that for 30 to 45 minutes every day. And when I first started doing it, it was, my trainer said to do it because it was going to help, because I was prepping for a show, which we could talk about that in a minute. And, I was like, ugh, I want to do that. But what I found is it really helps my lower back. So on the days that I don't, like, then I thought, I'm only going to do it like 5 days a week. So on the days that I didn't do it, my back was stiffer. So now I just do it as my morning wake up. You know, I do the bike, I grab my phone, do what, I remember do on there, and then I start my day.
Yeah. So when you were doing your, in your off season, for example, were you doing cardio less frequently or more than when you're pre-contesting? So it's all the same.
I always feel like I'm in prep. I've always trained like I'm in prep for a show.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I'm going to do a show, it's a little bit more intense. I'm eating more and I'm, adding a little bit more weight.
Yeah, that's interesting because normally when you're talking about pre-contesting, then you're actually saying that when you go to pre-contest, you're increasing calories and it gets even more intense. Is that what I'm hearing from you?
Yes.
Yeah, interesting because for me, it was the opposite of that. It was like I did a off-season.
Right.
I was consuming a hell of a lot more calories, doing less cardio. And then when I decided to start competing, that's when I started slowly cutting. And then I would cut all the way till about a month away from the show. And then I would eat up going into the show. There's a lot of different ways that you can do that. That's what you did is what worked for you. It's just interesting, that you did it that way, instead of, interesting. Did you ever have to, what would you say? I know you said you must've been pretty close to competition, even in your off season. How far away in terms of weight loss were you? Did you let yourself get out before a show?
I would say the most would be 15 pounds.
So you were always, you were just really close the whole time.
Always.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that sort of the norm for, would you say, the females? I know like with me, back when it was about get as big as you can in the off season and then you cut weight. The problem with that is that you ended up cutting a lot of muscle, because you have so much fat to get off, So that's when I started. That's when I started learning to be about no more than 20 or 25 pounds away from the show. But you were even closer than that.
Yeah, my trainer doesn't believe in, doing a heavy bulk and then a hard cut.
Yeah.
He wants to keep me, fit, I want to stay tight all the time.
Yeah.
So when I do a show, it's not that hard to come down.
Yeah. And that actually makes more sense to do that.
Yeah. It hurts coming down anyway to cut down and to lean out that hard.
Yeah.
It really hurts. And the older I get, the harder it is.
Yeah. And it's very stressful. I know that one of the problems that, because over the years I've trained not only bodybuilders, but athletes that were wrestlers. And one of the mistakes that they made, which is talking, it goes to your point, is that they would cut so hard towards the end that they actually went into the event weak. They had no stamina or endurance. And that happened to me, actually, at one of my shows. And, you know, so I don't know, but I felt so bad after doing one of my shows that, I mean, I thought I almost killed myself, I think. I was pushing so hard towards the very end, but I learned a great lesson. In fact, what happened to me was I was so depleted, and I pulled so much water out of my system for quite a few days before the show. When I got up there on stage, when I went to hit a double bicep, I couldn't contract. All my electrolytes were shot. It was really a weird sensation.
Yeah.
You know? And did that ever happen to you?
No.
Yeah.
No, because I've done it very health-wise.
Yeah.
My trainer was at every show with me in the pump-up room, and he would say, all right, you know, I want you to eat this now, or, you know. So I've always said, if I'm going to do this, I have to stay healthy.
Yeah.
And that's why you see what's happened is there's been so many of these young men and women bodybuilders that they're dying lately.
Yeah.
There's been a lot of them, and a lot is because of the way that they're, you know, they're like what we're talking about, training and eating and depleting, and a lot about what they're taking.
Yeah.
So if you're not going to be smart about it and you just want to get up on that stage, you know, you might get up on that stage, but when you get home, you might not make it.
What kind of cardio did you do? Do you have a certain machine that you like to use, or did you mix that up too?
Well, when I first started back at the gym, my best friend had me do the stair climber, which I hated. But it worked because I lost a lot of weight. It wasn't a lot. I was like 30 pounds heavier. But now I do the bike. It's a small, encumbrant bike, and I don't have to hold on. So I could just sit there and do it. I've done the elliptical. That's okay. And I don't like the treadmill. So,
yeah. Yeah. The treadmill is that and the stair is my least favorite for sure. I'm hooked on it. I like the upright. I have an upright bike that I ride. It's funny how we get kind of used to, and I do like ellipticals too, you know, but yeah, like you, I'm not a big fan of, look, the whole thing, the weight training and the cardio, I never was. It was like a love-hate relationship throughout my whole career. I didn't really love it. Like I didn't really love, but I loved the feeling of it. I loved the result of it more than I actually loved. You know, I look forward to go doing that. No, to be honest with you, I didn't. And yet I stuck with it for all these years. I mean, and it's still, you know, it sounds like you're as well. It's like you get addicted to this in a way that it becomes a part of your life, and you just go in and do it whether you're feeling well or not. It doesn't really matter at this point, you know. And that's what's kind of separates the people in the industry. You know, there's the wannabes that kind of, they come and go. And then there's people like you and I who have been around forever, you know? So I think that's a mark of your intensity and your discipline compared to somebody who thinks they want to go do this. So your cardio is pretty much the recumbent. Is that what you said? It's a recumbent bike?
Yeah, it's a small bike. It's low, and I could just sit and pedal.
Yeah.
I have my coffee on one side and my phone in my hand.
There you go.
Good wake up.
Good distraction. And then in the when you were in, how many calories a day would you say that you normally eat, and does that change? I know you said you increase your caloric intake as you go into a show. So in this case, how many calories do you eat a day before you go into the pre-contesting?
Well, I've never counted calories, so I don't even know how to do that. But I carb cycle. So right now I eat 150 to 200 grams of protein a day, and I've always done that. So I eat a lot. And then my carb cycle, it's a four-day cycle. So it depends on where I'm at. If I'm growing, I'm eating more carbs. And if I'm leaning, I'm eating less carbs.
So you don't – this is really interesting. You don't – I mean, I know to the nth degree how many calories I'm taking in, protein and all that kind of stuff. Now, does your trainer help you do that? Does he control your intake like that? Is that, are you just simply just eating by, you know, how you feel and intuitive?
I I'll ask him. Right now I see him once a month. So I'll go train with him and I'm like, all right, what should I eat? And lately he'll say, you know what to eat. So, and if I'm getting, you know, if I'm leaning out, like, you know, I'm going somewhere, I'll cut back on the carbs. Yeah. So like right now, normal, what I do is 50 grams of carbs for 3 days. And then my fourth day is a high carb. It's like 150 to 200 grams of carbs.
Mm-hmm.
And then I go right back to the first day, 50 grams of
carbs.
That's
the cycle. So what's the point of all that? To cycle like that?
Well, the point of that is you're doing your low carbs or your regular carbs. When you do your high carbs, you're basically spiking everything in you and you're shocking your body. It's going, whoa, I didn't have all that.
Yeah.
And then when you go back to the low carbs, it pulls everything out of it. All the glycogen comes out.
Yeah.
You fill your muscles and so forth. But when I'm prepping for a show, it's higher carbs. Because mm-hmm. kind of like you're bulking.
Yeah.
So, for example, my last show, a few months before my high carb, he had me on 500 grams of carbs in it one day. That's a lot of food. So all I would literally do is sit and eat yams, bags of cooked yams and oatmeal too. It's like, I don't even know how I consumed it, but it fills your muscles, it fills everything up. And then your body's like, okay. And then when you go down to the low carbs, pulls everything out that doesn't need to be in there.
500 grams of carbs is 2,000 calories. I can tell you that. This is stuff that I'm really into.
Okay.
So 2,000 calories of yams, that's a lot of damn yams you got to eat.
That's a lot.
It really is. And, that's the kind of stuff that people that are not in the sport don't realize. I mean, the sport is still based on extreme behavior. I mean, because for you to eat 500 grams, at 2,000 calories, was it pretty much all at one time, or was that throughout the whole day?
No, throughout the day.
Okay, throughout the day.
It was a lot. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. I'd be at work, and, I do hair, so in between clients I would have, because I meal prep, and I would take, all these yams and cook it and have it in bags, and I would literally sit there and just take handfuls and just shove it down. I couldn't even think about what I was eating. And, the salon I was at, all the girls were like, what are you doing? I'm like, just don't even ask me what I'm doing.
You don't want to know.
Yeah.
So based on that, then if you're eating 500 grams of carbohydrates, that's 2,000 calories. And you said that, excuse me, you were eating 200 grams of protein.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's another 800 calories. So right there, you're eating 2,800 calories a day. How much, what was your grams of fat that you were taking in? Or do you know that?
I know that. So it was 50 grams of fat a day.
That's 450 calories.
That was, yes, but that was one day a week I would have to do that high carb, like every 4 days.
Okay. So
it wasn't every day.
Yeah. So you would go from 50 grams, which is 200 calories. Now, when you were doing that, with the 50 grams, because that was the beginning of your carb cycle or carb loading, is what you were doing.
Right.
Okay. So did your grams of protein stay the same, or did you keep that the same 200 grams, that stayed steady, or did that fluctuate with your carbohydrate intake?
Well, it only fluctuated on that high carb day because I couldn't eat anymore. I was like, all I was doing was eating
carbs. Yeah.
I couldn't get any more food in. When he had first told me that one day, he said, all right, this week you're going to eat, I literally cried. And then he had me do it another week. And I go, I can't, I like throw up. Like I can't eat like this.
Yeah.
And he goes, you could do it. I would literally at night before I go to bed, I'd make a bowl, a big bowl, like a bowl that you would prepare, to cook food in, like mixed food, of oatmeal, like 2 cups of oatmeal.
Yeah.
And I would literally take it and just shovel it. My husband would look at me and I go, don't look at me.
Yeah.
Don't ask questions. And I would just tell myself, eat it. And I would just eat it. Like I would like this blank stare, just eat it and I get it down.
Yeah.
But I don't want to do that again.
It's kind of insane behavior.
And I don't have to do that again.
Yeah.
It's insane.
Yeah. Okay, so again, I'm. This is interesting because I never did that. Your carb cycle reminds me of when I used to carb load. See, what I did is I was on a high-fat diet and Monday through Friday, And then on the weekend, I would do carb loading. So Monday through Friday, my carbohydrate intake was 30 grams or less, because the 30 grams or less, what it did is it flipped my metabolism over to a free fatty acid metabolism. So you have two different metabolisms within the body, and the way you turn one on or one off is how many carbohydrates that you're taking in. Now, so it takes 3 days for your body to flip over to the free fatty acid. So Monday through Friday, I would actually be on 20 or 30 grams of carbs. 56% of my diet was fat, and then the rest was protein. So it was basically a high protein, high fat, low carbohydrate diet. But what I did it for was mainly to switch the metabolisms, because I did better on fat metabolism than I did glucose, which is what your glucose is, your sugar diet. Okay, that's what your metabolism, based on the fact that you were taking in 50 grams, your body was in glucose metabolism. Okay, so when you were carb cycling up, that's when I would do a carb load on the weekend. I couldn't take protein in. I mean, it was just too much, because at that point I was carb loading. I was eating like 10,000 calories a day. Well, hell, you know, it's hard enough just to get all those carbs in. But I know what you mean. That sensation of putting carbs back in would fill the muscle up. And I don't know about you, but would you be so tight sometimes that I could hardly almost move when I had that many carbohydrates in my system. Did you get that feeling as well?
Oh, yeah. I feel it every time I do it. Like right now I'm doing 50 for three. And then the fourth day I'm doing about 100, 150. And when I carb load that day, I'm like, I'm so tight.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah.
Yeah, I know. It's a good feeling. You know, it would be so tight sometimes I can hardly move my arms. I mean, it was that kind of sensation. It's kind of weird. So when you were doing carb loading like that, did it make you feel lethargic? Did you get lazy because of all the sugar? It's like a hangover when you take that many carbs in.
Yeah, my body actually works better with lower carbs.
Yeah.
So when I was doing all the high carbs, and plus I was working and training, so, you know, I was just like, I have a full-time stylist that works for me. She's my assistant.
Yeah.
And I'd get this big bag out, and I'd sit down. I go, I got to eat. She's like, go, just go eat. You know, I'd take these yams, and she'd be like, she's eating, leave her alone.
Yeah. So you didn't have too much trouble with lethargy then, right, from eating all the carbs? I mean, did you have that? No? Because I did. It was awful. No. You know, and especially like on the weekend when I was eating 10,000 calories. I mean, that was per day. So at 20,000 calories over the weekend, all I was doing was eating. And I was so, taking that kind of sugar in. It's like a hangover. That's what alcohol is. It's a sugar hangover. And it was a nightmare. And the way that I controlled that, I learned, was to, when I carb loaded and added fat to my carb load, it smoothed that out. Because what it did is slowed that release into the body. It's kind of like the difference between a complex carbohydrate versus just taking in simple sugar. You know, I don't know if you had, did you ever, when you were carb loading like that, I know you said did you have any fat when you were carb loading? Like, would you put butter on your yams, or it was just straight yams?
Oh. Yeah, no, when I was competing, I did no fat. Mm-hmm. Nowadays, they have competitors, they want you to eat good fats, avocado and peanut butter and stuff. But when I was competing, no fat. I didn't have fat for 3 years.
Really?
None.
Are you talking zero fat, really? So you were just eating protein, lean, zero fat protein, and carbohydrates.
That's it. Yep.
And what was the thinking behind that?
The thinking those days was behind that, to keep you lean and tight, you know. And then he switched it up, I guess, you know, you keep learning and trying different things.
Yeah.
We need good fats, you know. So now, and I still don't eat a lot of fats just because I don't think about it.
Yeah.
You know, my basic diet is egg whites, oatmeal, steak, turkey, and chicken.
Yeah.
And vegetables. That's it.
Yeah.
You know, once in a while, eat some peanut butter. And that to me is like I'm cheating. You know?
Yeah.
Peanut butter.
Well, and I think what you're talking about, and is that, and I, look, we all have our ways of going about eating and getting a result. So the way what I'm about to share with you isn't necessarily better. It's just that that's what worked for me. But it's really interesting because the way you're talking is like you, the reason why you weren't taking in fat, and it, again, this is my opinion, and you can certainly correct me there, but what in the what you were thinking and the way you were eating was that the fat was the culprit. I didn't want to eat fat because I didn't want my body to put on fat. That's what it sounds like to me, okay? And from my perspective and my training and what I learned, and again, have you heard of a guy named Dr. Mauro Di Pasquale?
I think you talk about him in your book.
Yeah, him and I wrote The Anabolic Diet, okay? And he does ketogenic, mm-hmm. and so he knows all about that stuff, you know? And he's the one that actually came out and said, look, you're not a product of what you eat. And he made me understand that from a physiological perspective, because when food breaks down, it breaks down into the same thing. It breaks down into energy, a unit of energy that produces heat to the body. Essentially, that's what ends up happening physiologically. So, you know, it was hard for me to wrap my head around that. But when he broke it down like that, that made a different kind of sense to me. And then he started, you know, then I started learning how to manipulate the macros. For example, and this is what I mean about fat being really useful. When you add fat to a baked potato, because, you know, a baked potato, I'm sure you know, it's very high glycemic. So if you just take a baked potato without butter, it breaks down into your body as fast as like candy does, pretty much. It's the mm-hmm. glycemic index value of that potato is very high. So you would get what you're talking about. You get a spike, but on the other side of that spike, you get a crash, okay? And unless you were constantly eating carbohydrates, you're constantly dealing with this, I don't know about you, this roller coaster. I can feel my energy just going up and down. But the minute I started adding fat to the baked potato, for example, then all of a sudden what fat does to the baked potato is it absorbs the sugar, and the result of that is it slows the release of energy into the body. So you actually get more of a sustained energy to the body. That was how, you know, that's what I learned from that style of eating. So it really is interesting when I hear you say that you cut all your fat out of your diet, you know, and yet you were highly successful. It just goes to show you mm-hmm. more than one way to skin a cat, you know? Now, how long have you... go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, how long have you been carb cycling like this?
8 years.
And it's just like day in and day out. You haven't gone off. It's just something that you just do the same every day.
No, I switch it up. I've gone off where I'm like, you know, I'm just going to, sometimes I eat what I want. You know, I like tacos and, ice cream. but my staple is, you know, what I eat.
Yeah.
I eat clean.
Yeah.
And because I eat so clean, when I eat stuff I shouldn't, my body doesn't like it. My stomach hurts, you know, and so it's easier to just stay with where I'm at. And, you know, like I said, my cheat would be a taco. Like I went out the other night with my assistant and we had tacos for dinner and we didn't feel like, oh my God, I blew it, because, you know, I'm basically not competing, so I don't have to stay so tight, but I like how I look. So I want to stay that way and I feel better.
Yeah.
But I'll switch up the carbs. You know, sometimes I'll do more, sometimes I'll do less. Sometimes it'll just be steady, you know. Yeah. I'll just stay with, you know, a cup of carbs a day and I'm fine. And then other days I'm like, oh, I'm going to eat more carbs today.
Yeah.
So I listen to my body and see how it feels.
Yeah. One of the things that you were saying, this goes back to the body becomes this function and it's always trying to adapt to its environment. And the environment that you're talking about is, you know, you're saying that when you go out and blow it and do a cheat maybe for too long and eat a different way, that you don't feel, your body hurts and it gets upset, you know, and that the same thing happens, Sandy, when you're on a junk food diet. For example, you can put somebody on a junk food diet, and when the body adapts to that, when you make them eat and have them eat clean, they get the same exact feeling. And you would think that that wouldn't be the case, but that's, again, that is a good example of your physiology, you know, and how it's always trying to adapt to an environment, and then you switch it up for the better, in this case, to eat clean, and yet for a while it takes for it to adapt to that scenario. It's just amazing
right.
what you can get used to. And, you know, and not everybody that eats like Sandy is going to get the same result as Sandy, just like if I told people like the way that I ate. Not everybody is going to, you know, turn out to have the same result. And this is another thing that's really interesting, I think, about this sport, is that there's a certain amount of trial and error that you have to be willing to tolerate to see how it actually works for you. Would you agree with that?
Right. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
You know?
Yeah.
And so, you know, that cracks me up. So how many calories then? Of course, you don't count your calories. This really blows my mind. I have to tell you this. I'm that person that is. My whole life depends and is based around a formula and a number, and yours really isn't. You know.
Mine is. I count carbs. That's all I care about.
Yeah.
How much carbs am I eating?
That's it. And you don't care about your protein. Is that what you're telling me?
Well, I care about my protein because I know I'm eating that. You know what I mean? That I eat protein every day.
Yeah.
So, and I eat a lot every day. So, and I eat protein every meal. So it's the thing that I just focus on now is, okay, how many carbs am I going to have?
Oh boy. That's interesting. I love it. okay. So do you take any shakes at all, or do you just eat food?
When I first started competing, my trainer didn't want me on any shakes. He's like, got fillers. I don't want you on any of that. And I was like, fine. So now I do. I take one shake a day in the morning after I have my egg whites for breakfast. And then I have all my rest of my meals.
So what's in your protein drink?
I put in a scoop of protein, which is 25 to 30 grams. And then I also like Muscle Egg, which is a flavored liquid egg white. Mm-hmm. And I'll put a cup of that in and then some water, and that's it.
So
I don't drink any milk.
Okay, so your protein that you're taking in, is it a milk and egg protein? Is it whey? What kind of protein do you take?
It's whey.
Whey.
Yeah.
Is it whey isolate or just straight whey?
Whey isolate.
Whey isolate. Yeah. And do you take that before before your training session?
Yeah, typically right before I train. Sometimes I take it in the gym with me and I drink it, you know, as I'm training. It just depends.
Yeah. And what about, do you take any protein in the evening? So like a milk and egg or anything like that?
I don't take a shake in the evening, but I eat up until I go to bed, which is usually about 11 or 12. So I'll eat right up until I go to sleep.
Yeah. What do you think about
it? Right before
go ahead and finish.
Sometimes I'll eat steak right before I go to sleep. Just depends on what I feel like eating.
What do you think about, I had a interview with a guy named Carl Lenore who addressed this, but what do you think about the idea? Some people, like I have this training, personal training studio now for a lot of years, and I've worked with a lot of clients. And of course I was in the bodybuilding arena and I saw that side of it too. We ate all the time, late at night. It didn't matter. And yet so many people are advised by their doctors or whoever that you should stop eating at 6 o'clock at night. And I've never believed that. Although, you know, this guy that I was interviewing with, Carl Lenore, I thought he made a pretty good point, because he said that, you know, if you never let your body, you know, if it's always trying to break down food, I think they call that autophagy, that your body can't really fully recover because it's always in work mode, you see? And, but the bodybuilders that I hung around, especially when we're traveling, and I mean, you had to eat sometimes late at night, but it was like, here's the way I looked at it. Your body needs so many calories a day to function, you know, and your body tells you if you're not eating enough because it'll drop weight. And so I never thought that to be an issue. Has anybody ever mentioned that to you as far as you eating that late at night?
I've heard, you know, oh, you shouldn't eat past this certain time. And I'm like, well, I do. Working for me, you know. And one of my clients the other day, she goes, oh, you know, she's trying to lose weight. I go, okay, what are you doing? She goes, intermittent fasting. I go, okay, well, explain it. I wanted her to tell me, you know, and she's basically saying, well, you know, I don't eat from like 8 at night till, you know, 10 in the morning. You know, and your body's supposed to have all this time to, like you're saying, recover and do all that. I'm like, okay, is it working? You know, and she said, well, I started it a month ago. And I go, well, what have you lost? And she needs to lose some weight. And she said, 5 pounds. I said, in a month? You know, so that ain't working.
Yeah.
You know, I could lose 5 pounds in a week.
Right.
So, you know, it just depends. But for me, if I stopped eating at 8 at night, I would starve by the time I'd go to bed.
Yeah.
You know, I'd feel it, you know. I eat every 2 hours. So, and in 2 hours is when I'm like, I need to eat, you know, and there's times I've missed it, you know, I'm working, so I can't. On that, you know, 3 hour mark, I'm like, I gotta eat. I'm getting hangry, you know, I'm shaky.
Yeah.
You know, my blood level's going,
yeah.
You know, everything's dropping. So I have to eat.
Yeah. And you know, Sandy, and you know, I want to bring my perspective to this thing because, you know, maybe like you, I'm always interested and I keep learning new stuff, you know, that keeps evolving, you know. And it's funny that you're saying that every 2 hours. And here's my take on that. Here's my own firsthand experience, because I felt the same way that what you're talking about. When, as a bodybuilder, it was like basic nutrition 101 was to eat every few hours. You know, that's why I lived and breathed by that. And yet I came across information not too long ago about how your body is actually more efficient if you eat fewer times a day. And there's a physiological reason for that. And that is because when your body is in between eating, when it's sleeping, what happens physiologically is that your liver and your pancreas secrete enzymes, lipase. There's a few things that but they're enzymes and they're bile. And when you eat fewer times a day, your body actually produces larger amounts of these enzymes and this bile. And the job of enzymes and bile is to, it's in your bloodstream. It actually breaks down any kind of fat. If you're storing any kind of fat, like a triglyceride, because that's what your body does when when you eat too much, it has to do something. So it normally stores a sugar as a fat, as a triglyceride.
Right.
So when you're eating fewer times a day, you're getting larger amounts of bile and enzymes in your bloodstream. It goes up to the triglyceride, which is a fat, and it breaks it back down into free fatty acid, and now it uses it as energy again. So this, again, when I hear about and learn about stuff like this, it blows my mind. But, you know, physiology, it's hard to, you know, to go against how your physiology just normally works. But I think what you're saying more than anything else was that you've taught your body. For me, it's like you doing warm-ups before a workout. You've taught your body that you need to eat every 2 hours. And when you go past that, your body is so, it adapts so specifically to your environment that it lets you know that. You know, so, you know, is it, again, for those people that are listening to this, is there a certain way and a right way that you should be doing it, and the only way that you should be doing this? No, because I think that the way you're doing it is fine. And I also think that from what I've learned, I intermittent fast every day. I do an intermittent fast every single day. I don't eat until I go back, go at home at night, and I have my one meal and I still train. I'm not training, you know, like I was intensely back when I was competing. And I don't know that I would do that if I was competing, but I'm just saying that at this stage of the game, for me, the intermittent fast works. But it's just, I don't know, it's just so fascinating to listen to people like yourself, because, you know, you talk to 5 different people that are in the sport and you're bound to get 5 different ways and that they swear by it, you know? So that's kind of
everybody has their way.
Yeah, and it kind of takes me back to my point that, you know, when you're living the bodybuilding lifestyle and especially when you're competing and all that, you really have to make a commitment to the process to find out what really works. You know, because I had a guy, a buddy of mine, Don Ross, he told me before, he said, you know, Leo, everything works to a degree. It's just, and he was referring to training, it could, you know, weight training, cardio and nutrition, those components. But he said, it's a question of to what degree it works for you. And it made a lot of, it made a lot of sense to me because it took a while, you know, for me to figure all that out. And then it started making sense, as to why it does take so long for bodybuilders to get on stage to look really right up there. I mean, you're remarkable in that you started when you did and in the success that you've had, you know, and you're still living that lifestyle. My one of my questions would be now, you know, after all these years, like I've been in it for 40 years. Are there any regrets, you know, that you got into this sport or to this lifestyle? Any regrets?
None.
Yeah.
I wish I would have started competing years before, but none. It's all been very positive health-wise for me. When I had my hip replacement, it was outpatient surgery. When they get you up like an hour after the surgery and the nurse comes in, she goes, okay, well, you need to get up and walk now. And I said, okay. So I, you know, put my legs to the side and I got up and walked. She's like, wait a minute, you need a walker. I'm like, no, I don't. You know, and I go walking down the hall. And
hold on there.
And my husband's going, that's her, you know. So the nurse goes, well, let me like tie a belt around you in case you fall. I'm like, all right. So she ties like this band around me so she can hold me like, okay. And they let me go home. I went home in an hour after that. So I was home in 3 hours after surgery. I used the walker at home for a week. And I worked out at home. I had made a little gym. So the next day I went in, I did arms and stuff. I didn't stop. And then the second week I went back to the doctor and he says, you're released. He said, go do whatever you want. I go, what do you mean? He says, do whatever you got to do. He goes, you're free to do whatever you want. If it hurts, don't do it. He said, you are in the 1 percentile of people because I can't stop you. So I had physical therapy 3 times a week. And then I went back to the gym with a cane. I used the cane and I went back to work 2 weeks later and
bada boom.
Perfectly fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know,
so it's helped me.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that, and this again is in place to what you're saying, is that as a strength coach, because I do a lot of strength training, or I used to work with a lot of athletes. And one of the things that we learned about training is that, and this goes to training young athletes, even prepubescent, is that when you're an athlete like this, when you stay an athlete and you continue to train, when you have those moments where you're hurt, in your case, you had an injury, the recovery rate is 50% faster for those people that are working out. And you know, something that applies to a lot of people, not only athletes, but it also applies to my women that I used to train that were pregnant. I kept, you know, once we got past the trimester, it was like, you know, you're going to work out. And you know something, those women that did that, when they had their baby, they were back and doing normal life. And I mean, at least 50% faster than the women that didn't do that.
Oh, definitely.
You know,
definitely.
So there's, I'm with you on that because, you know, bodybuilding and training is something has saved my life. I think, especially after, you know, I have these strokes and I think that, you know, people said, well, it's because you're bodybuilding. And, you know, at that point, you know, I was, you know, carrying a lot of weight. It was the sport for me was based on extreme behavior to a degree. You know, I'm not going to say that maybe the training and all that didn't have a part because it was part of the extreme behavior. But the training itself and bodybuilding, I have to tell you something, that sport has saved me in so many ways. because it helped me recover mm-hmm. from being paralyzed. It helped me with a mindset that helped me deal with life, because life kicks your fucking ass at times. Pardon my French, Dubois. It does. And you know something? If it wasn't for that sport gave me nothing but a life lesson that I use every single day. Mm-hmm. And I'm happy.
Yeah, it's true.
It's one of the best things that's ever happened into my life. And I'm so lucky that I found bodybuilding and in this lifestyle.
Yeah, I agree 100%. I know for me, it's saved my body. You know, if I wouldn't have been training like I do and I needed hip replacement, I don't think I would have recovered that quick or anything. You wouldn't have.
No, your training and your mindset, it made you heal faster. You were back because of that reason. You know?
Right.
And maybe because that you were lifting all that weight was part of the reason why the hip, you know, you had the issue. But I talk about this in my stroke book. You know, the thing that almost took me out is what saved me. And that's kind of a weird thing because, you know, it is true, you know. And I guess maybe the lesson there and the life lesson there is just, you know, it's like you just have to figure out how to make things, how to use adversity to your benefit, you know. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of like what I did. It sounds like that's what you did, you know. Mm-hmm. Anyway, listen, I think this has been a very interesting talk. Is there anything else that maybe you'd like to mention? I mean, I asked you some questions and, you know, trying to see this and, you know, for our audience, maybe what they would ask. Is there anything that you'd like to, that I didn't cover, that you'd like to talk about?
No, I would just encourage anyone that's watching or listening that it's never too late, and you don't have to get to the extreme that, you know, that we're both at. Just get in the gym. I don't know. I could be out anywhere. I'll be at the bank or at the grocery store or anywhere. And people come up to me and they'll say to me, I ate good today. Like, hey, I'm not your diet priest, but okay. Like, all right. You know, or like, I need to work out. I'm like, well, do it, you know?
Yeah.
And it's never too late, you know? And I just want people to know you could, you know, can inspire others, you know, and if you want to go to the gym, get in there. Don't be afraid.
Yeah.
And you don't have to go in there with this huge goal. Go in there and say, I'm just going to do 20 minutes of cardio. And then, you know, the next day, 20 minutes. And then the third day, do, you know, 30 minutes and, you know, go look at the weights and don't be intimidated.
Yeah.
Just get in there and do something.
I like that.
Only have one body.
That's
you know, we have one body. If we don't take care of it, nobody else is going
That's a good point.
You know, they're just not.
So let me ask you this now, because this, you know, you say you do hair, and do you do like hair extensions and all that good stuff? Or
I do. I'm here in my studio right now. I specialize in hair extensions.
Okay.
I have my own line of hair and my own label, and I have a full clientele. I'm always taking new ones, and I love what I do. We do color as well, but that's it. Just hair extensions and color. And I have a full-time stylist that works with me and get the clients in. And my line of hair lasts for over a year. And they come in once a month and we move it up. I do a lot of competitors.
I was going to ask you about that.
And just a lot of regular people, you know, regular women that just want long, beautiful hair.
Well, and the thing about that is, going back to the competitors, what it's important to pay attention to detail. You know, you can have this great body, but if you got hair that's all over the place and messy, and that's all the judges are going to see, you know, and it's very important.
Right.
What you do actually very important for a lot of women, including, you know, people who just want long, beautiful blonde hair and or the competitors that need to look right.
Any color.
Any color
hair.
You said that you have a label. So do you have your own product that you've come up with? When you say label.
Yeah, my line is Mane of Your Dreams, and it's my own line of hair. I also have a certification program that I teach licensed stylists, and it's a one-on-one or a group of hands-on, and then they can they get certified, and then from there, then they can purchase my hair as well.
Wow.
And I've been doing hair extensions exclusively for the past 18 years. So my name's out there.
Yeah.
I love what I do.
And it sounds like it sounds like you have a niche there. Anyway, yeah. So listen, my mission today, I've been out of the sport now for a while. My company is, we're getting back in. I wrote all these with my partner, these bodybuilding courses back in the late 80s. And we had a lot of good success then. And we're still selling these books, but we're back into it again, you know. So, but my mission and my sort of philosophy back then, just like it is today, you know, I told myself, you know, I would do this training that I did with my personal training business, I would do it for free if I didn't have to pay bills, because like what you just said, I love it. I love it today like I did, you know, yesterday. And my mission is to constantly evolve and search for the truth. That's what keeps me going. It's fascinating to me because I just feel that if you stop doing that, you just stop growing. You know, just emotionally.
Exactly.
You know, so I think it's really important. And I'm always looking for people, which I think you're one of them, that are, you know, the real deal. You know, you live what you talk about, and I respect that. And so I'm always searching out
because
one of the best things that you can do is to, you know, I'm sure you heard the expression, just pay it forward. You know, what I learn, I like to share with other people. And hopefully just to share the experience of bodybuilding, or share the experience of getting into the gym and just doing it for fitness. It's all about sharing and being open about that. I think that's what makes this whole thing go round and round. So I really do appreciate you coming on the show. And maybe I'll see you next time when I go down into your into LA to see Shade.
Yeah, hope to see you. Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure.
All right,
good to see
Sandy,
you as well.
You take care, all right?
Have a great day.
Bye-bye.